The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
We've got so much more to come in the second hour, including Tom Brady delivering a message to Max. No, I wish. To his new teammate, plus the one and only Floyd Money Mayweather will join us live. You know, Max and Stephen A. can't wait to chop it up with him. But first, Mike McCarthy is going to have his hands full this weekend if Andy Dalton can't go against the Eagles. The Cowboys coach was asked if preparing young quarterback Ben DiNucci will be a tougher task. Take a listen.
Is it harder? I mean, was I not supposed to laugh at that? I mean, it's kind of hard to tell with your mask on, so I didn't know if you were serious. It's a bit harder to prepare with a first-year quarterback, than Andy. Yes.
All right, Damian Woody back here with us. Damian, good to see you. Stephen, I'm going to start with you here. Who do you think's under more pressure in this game? Would you say it's Mike McCarthy or Carson Wentz?
Well, first of all, easily Carson Wentz. Easily.
Okay.
So let me get this straight, y'all. Let me get this straight. So the Dallas Cowboys have the worst defense in football, okay? The worst run defense in football, one of the top five worst defenses in yards allowed, the very worst in points allowed, the very worst in rushing yards allowed. That's on the defensive side of the ball. Can't get to the quarterback, can't sack the quarterback, can't defend anybody in the secondary, et cetera, et cetera. And then we get to the offensive side of the ball. Dak Prescott is gone. Ezekiel Elliott clearly has nosedived, primarily because you got an offensive line that's completely obliterated injury-wise, and as a result, you got some subs that just ain't ready for the challenge, okay? All right? With a new coach that the players ain't feeling to begin with an owner/GM that's cussing out radio hosts, all right? And let me get this straight. Mike McCarthy's the one under pressure? Can you imagine what Max will be here saying about Carson Wentz? If Carson Wentz loses to these Cowboys, I mean, who's the quarterback? I have to look it up because I'll be damned if I knew. Who's the quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys?
Ben DiNucci.
Could you say that again? DiNucci. First time I heard that name as a quarterback in the National Football League. DiNucci.
I think I used to cop Ben DiNucci's back in elementary school.
DiNucci, right. Yeah, man, really? I mean,
sunglasses.
So, let me get this straight. Carson Wentz. Can go into a football game against the hated rival division nemesis known as the Dallas Cowboys that's got subs on your offensive line, a dude named DiNucci, not even Andy Dalton, DiNucci playing quarterback, okay? All right, and a defense that's virtually non-existent with a coach that ain't, the players ain't feeling, a defensive coordinator that's getting Tabasco sauce caught in his eye during press conference, and an owner/GM that's cussing out radio hosts to show his attitude and more fire than the players showed when Andy Dalton got knocked upside his head and Carson Wentz can afford to lose to that team? Please, he better win this game. If there was ever a game that Carson Wentz had better win, could you imagine, Max, if you come in here Monday and Carson Wentz lost to Ben DiNucci, could you imagine that? Please.
Vasco's back in the day with DiNucci's.
Say what?
Used to break up Vasco's back in the day. A little Latigra, like some Vasco's, like, and some DiNucci's.
This is hilarious. It's not even close. Look, all the pressure's on Carson Wentz. Look, he better not lose this game.
You made a very good case, but you're wrong. You know why? I'm going to tell you what's going to happen already. If Carson Wentz somehow lost this game, all the Carson Wentz apologists would come out of the woodwork. Everyone's hurt.
Not for this one.
It's the same thing. Carson Wentz was squeaking by teams just like the Dallas Cowboys last season. Washington, the Giants, squeaking by those teams and every single quarterback in the division last year, and we're talking about a rookie in Daniel Jones, backups on Washington, all those quarterbacks did better against the teams that Wentz was squeaking by than Wentz did. And yet I used to come on every Monday and y'all were talking about how great Wentz is. He should be in the MVP conversation. I already know what Wentz is going to do against the Cowboys, what he always does. He'll have one amazing Patrick Mahomes level throw. He'll have three or four good ones, and then the rest will be poor execution and questionable decisions. That should still be enough to beat the Cowboys. But if it's not, Stephen A. Smith, Dan Orlovsky, maybe you, Damian, are going to come out and start defending Carson Wentz. So, in fact, while it should be, listen, is there pressure on McCarthy? Well, you just said it. He's dead last in everything on the defensive end. Doesn't that have something to do with the head coach? Isn't he presiding over this team? And on the offensive side, yep, he lost his quarterback. He lost his backup. He still has Ezekiel Elliott, who somehow forgot to play how to play football all of a sudden. He still has offensive weapons and receivers. You would think, like, it's one thing to lose. It's another thing to lose the way McCarthy has been losing. They have to be at least competitive.
Max. Stephen, I don't even know how to respond to this. I honestly think that this conversation, you have replaced Tom Brady with Carson Wentz, because your level of obsession with Carson Wentz now is just through the roof.
Get him, Damian.
How in the hell could you possibly say in this scenario that more pressure is on Mike McCarthy than it is on Carson Wentz? Stephen A. already talked about how everything in Dallas is in disarray. The defense can't stop a nosebleed. They don't have Dak Prescott. The backup quarterback is out. Stephen A., what's this quarterback name again?
Ben DiNucci.
A rookie quarterback, third-string quarterback, is in for the Dallas Cowboys, and you're going to sit here and talk about the pressures on Mike McCarthy? Why do you hate Carson Wentz so much?
I don't, actually. I have high hopes for Carson Wentz.
I'm just trying to figure this thing out with you. What is your obsession with Carson Wentz
The only obsession is I see elite top five talent and mid-pack results, and I'm being honest about it. I appear to be the only one. Look, if they somehow lose to Dallas, you guys are all going to come out here and start making excuses. But everything you just said about the Cowboys, you know what the worst part about it is? Mm-hmm. When you see everyone's dead last in defense, and then also they can't do anything offensively, it gives the impression that the team what? Quit. Right? This is what we were saying about the Dolphins early last year. And to Flores' credit, Coach got that team by the end of the season to be competitive. But early on, we were all saying, this is an indictment, man. They don't look like they want to play for him. He turned that around. Either McCarthy turns that around. People forgetting, early last season, are the Dolphins the worst NFL team of all time? Then they beat the Patriots last game of the season. They're 3-3 now, right? That's because Brian Flores can coach. He has guys playing. But McCarthy's going to have to do the same thing at some point this season. We're going to have to look at the Cowboys and say, that team didn't quit. They're still playing. And the Eagles are a divisional rival. They can't just get rolled like they're not trying.
Max, I get where you're coming from, man. I understand, man. But here's why your argument makes absolutely no sense. Because you have talked about Carson Wentz more than anybody. You've talked about him, Max, when he got them to the playoffs last year. With third stringers, you were talking about him and how he's not what he used to be. This year, he started off bad. You made that point, okay? The bottom line is, Carson Wentz, you also brought up his money, $109 million guaranteed. You brought up all of this stuff. And then all of a sudden, he's going up against Ben DiNucci.
Oh, my God.
And second, and our offensive line is non-existent. I'm going to repeat it again because it's worth repeating.
What?
Okay? You have no defense, all right? You got a head coach that the players clearly ain't vibing with. You got a defensive coordinator that's got a press conference and has to take a damn near 3-minute break because he gets Tabasco sauce caught in his eye. You got a GM / owner / president of football operations, and this dude is cussing out radio hosts, by the way, showing more toughness than his offensive lineman and his team showed when they knocked Andy Dalton upside the head. And you're going to tell me that Carson Wentz can afford to lose to those people?
No, this is what I'm telling you.
There's no way that you'll get crucified.
This is what I'm telling you. I agree with everything you just said, but I've been saying this. And if Carson Wentz loses, if Carson, but I'm the only one. There are only two places you'll find the real about Carson Wentz. Here on First Take from me, and in the front office of Philadelphia, where the Eagles drafted a quarterback in the second round.
But then it makes no sense, Mac. If you held him accountable all those other times, what are you going to say if you lose to the team? Right.
I want to make sure you do.
How is McCarthy under more pressure than him?
Because,
when you've
because the
Kusa
team
final.
Looks like it quit.
I have three things to say. Oh, Stephen God. A., you've had some good rants. I think that might be your best ever. That is hilarious.
Sometimes
you brought up the
universe
hot sauce.
Is kind.
I got hot sauce in my bag. Swag.
Oh, no, you didn't.
Wait, hold up, hold up. And, Damian, I got one more thing to say. You have the quote of the day, sir. Max has replaced his obsession with Tom Brady for Carson Wentz. I'm done, everybody. Hey, hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root, root, root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit DirecTV.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code FIRSTTAKE and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to gamble responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. This U.S. promotional offer not available in D.C., Mississippi, North Carolina, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 for New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. For West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. First bet offer for new customers only. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Bruce Arians was not short on praise for Antonio Brown this week, saying he looked fantastic in his first workout with the Bucs yesterday. Brown reunites with his former Pats quarterback, Tom Brady, who had this to say about past mentorships.
I had a lot of people support me over the years, realizing that I was far from where I needed to be, and they would guide me to and provide me with the help that I needed as a player to reach my potential. And I think that's how you impact people, and I think we talk about that a lot as professional athletes. How you impact people on the field is one thing, how you impact people off the field is another. So whether that's teammates that you can impact or people in the community that you can impact, I think all those things are important. A lot of joy in my experience comes from seeing other people be their best and seeing people succeed in ways that can set their family up.
Damian Woody back here with us, obviously won two Super Bowl championships with the Patriots. So Damian, I want to start with you. You heard Tom there being grateful about carrying the torch and paying it forward. What was your response to what you just heard?
Well, I mean, listen, this is a Tom Brady that learned from a unique culture in New England. I mean, early on in that press conference, he talked about how the guys, you know, like the Willie McGinnis, the Teddy Bruschis, you know, the Drew Bledsoes, how they instilled all those different values in Tom to show him what it took to be a pro on and off the field. And I think Tom is a guy that's paying it forward. You know, as far as it relates to Antonio Brown, you know, he had his opportunity in New England and obviously it didn't work out well. But I think that with Antonio Brown getting this chance now in Tampa with Tom, I think he understands and he feels indebted that Tom would stick his neck out for him to have an opportunity, not only to be a redemption story after everything that's happened, but also to be a part of a team that could possibly win a Super Bowl and play in a Super Bowl down in Tampa. you know, listen, Antonio Brown is to me, in my opinion, is going to be a Hall of Famer. And the opportunity to play with Tom Brady, and you see the relationship that those guys still had even when Antonio Brown was on the street. So I think Antonio Brown coming into this situation feels that, you know what, I'm not going to get – this is going to be my last opportunity. If I mess this up, that's going to be it as far as my career in the National Football League, and he owes a big part of that to Tom Brady sticking his neck out in a relationship that they've fostered over the time that he's been off the field.
Well, Molly, I think this is just terrible by Tom Brady. No, of course, what do you want me to say? Be anti-Tom Brady? Molly, in spite of what you may think, I'm not.
The fact of the matter is,
you're mad at me because I said Tom Brady's going to be the oldest quarterback ever if he's still great, and then he was.
Yeah.
The fact of the matter is, I'm unsurprised by this kind of leadership by Tom Brady. I think it says very good things about him. And I think there's look, in Antonio Brown's case, I've openly questioned his mental health and his emotional health on the air because of his behavior was so perplexing and self-destructive and destructive to others, it seemed to me. And I mentioned, you know, it's possible that he has those issues and he's also just a jerk. Those two things are not mutually exclusive. Not everyone with mental health issues is a jerk and vice versa, but sometimes they're both, and maybe that was Antonio Brown. But even that said, I think there's a tendency, you know, people talk about cancel culture, but and you can extend that to mean that if someone has some piece of behavior that you don't like, you can, or even a pattern of behavior, you can, I think there's a tendency to think they are now disqualified from ever rejoining society or the workforce. And that's a fundamentally destructive way mm-hmm. to think about things. You'd like for people to get better. You'd like for happy outcomes for everybody as much as possible. Even the people you feel are the bad guys, you'd hope that they can change their behavior and no longer be that way. Not that they shouldn't be punished or pay the price in some way, because you do need to set an example, but not just to be punitive. You've done a bad thing and now you must hurt. You know, it's to set examples and things like that. Ultimately, the best outcome is to change the behavior for the better. And that's what it sounds like Tom Brady is really talking about. When Damian says pay it forward, he had help in his life, we all have, and you'd like to help others too. It reminds me, it's not exactly the same thing, but it's the same place in Brady, I think, in terms of the leadership he's shown. When he was on that radio interview and a host mentioned something about his daughter that, listen, Stephen A has done radio, I've done radio, we could tell you. You're talking for hours on end, and you're trying to be entertaining, and sometimes you say something stupid. And that happened to the radio host, and it concerned Tom Brady's daughter, and Brady got up and left the interview. But when everyone was saying, oh, he should be fired, Brady said, no, I don't think he should be fired. He wanted him to learn from it and get better. That's the right attitude. It carries over, as Tom Brady said, off the field and on the field for him, and it's one of the things that makes him a great leader.
Well, one of the things I think also helped to bring up, to piggyback off the point that you just made about Tom Brady, let's keep in mind that when that radio host made that mistake in talking about his daughter, Tom Brady did not refuse to show up for the meeting, for the appearance on the radio show. He actually called in to tell the guy, this is why I'm not going to have that conversation
right.
with you guys. Here's what you did. I did not appreciate it, yeah. et cetera, et cetera. And so, to me, that was incredibly classy as yeah. well. He didn't just go to the media, stay in his locker room, not show up. He said, no, I'm supposed to show up weekly. But I'm not going to.
It was menschy behavior, as we're saying.
This is what you did. Now, having said all of that, let me be very, very clear. Tom Brady has no responsibility whatsoever for Antonio Brown. Antonio Brown's a grown man. It's up to Antonio Brown to conduct himself accordingly. And if he doesn't, he's going to pay a price because Bruce Arians has made it very, very clear there will be a no-tolerance policy. And I think Antonio Brown knows that. What Tom Brady is vouching for with Antonio Brown is that these two have a connection that would benefit the team on the football field and in the locker room. Tom Brady don't have anything to do with Antonio Brown going off at cops locally in Florida. He don't have any problem with him videotaping. You know, Tom Brady doesn't have anything to do with Antonio Brown secretly taping people when he's having conversations with them without them knowing. I mean, he doesn't have anything to do with that. He can't control something like that. And so those are the kind of things that we have to make sure we compartmentalize and we let it. Does Antonio Brown deserve a second chance? Yes, he does. Am I happy that he's going to be back in the league? Yes, I am. Do I think that he's going to play lights out? You damn right I do. But The flip side to it is that, let's be very, very clear, if he messes up because of his behavior, it's of no fault of Tom Brady. All Tom Brady was doing, and I appreciate what he articulated, is that you come from different backgrounds, you have a support base and a support system that some other people don't have. Being in a locker room for as long as I have been, hearing the stories, being connected to people that have endured things that I can only imagine, it reminds me of how blessed and fortunate I am to have had the life that I have in terms of my parents, my siblings, my whole family kind of structure and background. I'm incredibly fortunate to have that, but other people didn't. And because of that, they may not have known any better because of things that they've been exposed to, the mistakes that they've made, et cetera, et cetera. And I believe in other in people getting chances. I can respect Tom Brady for feeling that way, but I have even more respect for him for saying it.
Yeah, and as I said, there's a word in Yiddish that's made its way to English called a mensch. Yep. It means a human being in the best sense of the word. And Tom Brady, in those instances, in the radio interview, what he said here is menschy. Like, it's one of the ways he leads, and it's important. It's a good example.
No question. By the way, on the field, in the one game we did see AB play with Brady, he had 8 targets on 14 routes and a touchdown. So it will be fun to see them on the field. Damian, always good to see you, sir. Talk soon.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture Card. Earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day, and you can use those miles on any travel purchase. Plus, earn unlimited 5X miles on hotels and rental cars booked through Capital One Travel. Your next trip is closer than you think with the Venture Card from Capital One. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
One of the most exciting young boxers in the world will headline his own main event when undefeated 3-time world champion Gervonta Tank Davis takes on 4-division champion Leo Santa Cruz for the WBA Super Featherweight and WBA Lightweight Championships. On that note, a man who needs no introduction, the one and only Floyd Money Mayweather. Lakers down to the Sox right now. I see you, all those championships, Floyd. I know you're liking it. Thank you so much for being with us. I know it's early for you, but talk to me about Saturday night. Why is this a must watch?
This is a must watch because you have one guy that wants to prove to the world that he's able to jump weight classes and be up there with the likes of a Sugar Ray Leonard, like a Floyd Mayweather, like a Roy Jones, and so many others that have jumped different weight classes and tested their skills. And I'm talking about Leo Santa Cruz, relentless, tough competitor. And then we have another kid from Baltimore, like a baby Mike Tyson, but wants to show the world that he's a pay-per-view star. And Gervonta Tank Davis, 23 wins, 22 knockouts, and this is a must-see because, I mean, both guys are relentless. One guy, power puncher, heavy hitter. Another guy would never quit and come straight ahead with the will to win. So when you got two guys like this and both with that killer attitude, it's going to be a great fight.
Floyd, I remember interviewing you for the first time in 1998 on Friday Night Fights on ESPN2. And I don't know, you might have been 20 or 22. I was only like maybe 25 at the time. And I thought you were going to be a great fighter and all that. But there was some question as to the way they were going to market you at the time and how you would become a pay-per-view attraction. And you had different ideas than your promoter at the time, Top Rank. And you proved yourself right the way you marketed yourself, and you became the number one pay-per-view attraction. When you look at Tank, when you looked at him originally, what made you think, this guy, I want to be with this guy in his career. I want to mentor him. I want to guide his career because I believe he can be a pay-per-view star. What about Tank made you believe that?
I believed in him because he came to my gym. Actually, when I first met him, I don't really know his exact age, but he was a young kid. Came to me, wanted an autograph, and I told him within a few years, I said, this is to the future world champion. And if I'm not mistaken, within 4 years, he was world champion when I first signed his phone. But this kid got the will to win. I mean, the attitude. I mean, he's mean, he's hungry, and he's dedicated, and he's a heavy hitter. You know, I've never seen a guy, you know, with the will to win like Tank. The same will that I see in Tank is what I seen in myself when I looked in the mirror. So, I mean, this kid got dynamite in his hands. What else can I say?
He's got dynamite in his hands, Floyd. I ain't going to take that away from him. I like Javonte a lot. But I ain't going to lie. I want to see him against someone other than Leo Santa Cruz. I expect him to handle his business thoroughly this Saturday night. I'm looking forward to it. I will be watching that fight. But I just foresaw Teofimo Lopez going up against Lomachenko. And I want to see Javonte Davis fight those kind of guys. What do you say to that? How soon can we expect to see that?
I mean, when we say those kind of guys, I mean, meaning that we're never gonna take anything away from my fighter. My fighter didn't have to go to the Olympics. And as of right now, my fighter is on pay-per-view, and he's fighting on pay-per-view for a reason. I mean, Tank has went out there every time, pleased the crowd, and proved to the world that he deserves to be on that big stage.
Floyd, there's two different things, and you wore both hats very well. You're among the best of all time. You have a case for being the best of all time, certainly in terms of the boxing business and one of the greatest pure boxers of all time as well. But I think what Stephen A. is touching on there is something fans are interested in. So that's the competitive aspect. Do you feel that because you're saying that, look, Tank's already on pay-per-view. He didn't have to do the same thing everyone else had to do.
You got to realize this. When Tank went and won the world title, he beat an undefeated fighter. Mm-hmm. He went out there and beat a top guy when he first won the world title, and he wasn't even ranked in the top 10. So we're not going to discredit my champion and my fighter. He's hungry. He's dedicated. And when a time presents itself, it doesn't matter who it is. Tank is going to go out there and do what he has to do. Now, Leo Santa Cruz is also a fighter that's testing the waters to be great. And to test the waters to be great, you have to do the same thing Floyd Mayweather did. I slowly, gradually moved up and fought the best guys out there.
Yeah, I like Santa Cruz, but he's not Floyd Mayweather. I mean, Santa Cruz is a good fighter, but he's not Floyd Mayweather.
Let's be very clear. Nobody's trying to discredit Javonte, because Javonte can fight. We know this, and the brother's got knockout power. We see what he can do. What I'm saying is that there are some elite cats. You know, Leo Santa Cruz is not even in the top five in the junior lightweight division. You got a situation where in the lightweight division, Javonte is right up there climbing the charts, and there's a couple of elite fighters that I think that he could take. It would be interesting to see that. I want to know how soon would you like to see that?
Now we're basing a fight off just of one fight. I told you guys before, I never took nothing away from Lomachenko. I thought he was solid, but it's you guys that talk and said, oh, he's basically better than Muhammad Ali. He's better than Floyd Mayweather.
Remember, I never said that.
The professional ranks.
We never said that.
Professional and amateurs is two different things.
Floyd, let me ask you something about the business of all this. I asked you why you wanted to promote Tank when you first saw him, Javonte Davis. Why do you think he's been able to connect with a crowd? Because he draws real crowds when he fights. That's hard to do in boxing. He gets announced at Ravens games, and he gets a big ovation, right? And now he's already fighting on pay-per-view. What is it about Tank that is connected commercially with an audience?
His aura. People like him. That mean streak he got. You know, he got a boyish look. I mean, you know, he's very marketable. As far as when you look at him, he's marketable. But when the bell rings, he's a killer. And that's what people want to see. That's no different from when I was fighting at super featherweight. When I was fighting at junior lightweight, the boyish look. But when I get in there, I wreck shop. And then I slowly moved on and done something different. But as far as Tank, man, this kid he's remarkable. I can't take nothing away from him. I'm going to keep pushing him.
He's a major talent.
He's a finisher. Absolutely. He's got 14. Yeah. He's knocked out 14 of his last opponents. I mean, it's just that simple. He closes the deal. I love Javonte.
Yes.
Having said all of that, let me ask you this, because we can't have you on the show and not get into a bigger picture. Just answer this general question. Right now, in your opinion, Who's the best fighter in the world? I'm asking Money Mayweather.
At one particular time, I did talk about, I did say Terrence Crawford.
Okay.
Now, but what are we rating these fighters on? What are we rating these fighters on?
Floyd Mayweather's eyeball test.
That works.
You're
for me.
Eyeballing these guys. You watch Terrence Crawford. You know why he has a problem getting the other welterweights in the ring with him. It's a promotional network issue.
Because I look at it like this. Tank did the same thing Terrence Crawford did to Gamboa. So now you have to
But Gamboa was much younger at the time.
But guess what? There's a difference because Terrence Crawford is a much bigger fighter than Gervonta. So he did the same thing that he did. So we can put Tank up there in the top 10 in pound for pound. He has to be somewhere in pound for pound. And Canelo done something that is amazing. When Canelo was able to go to light heavyweight and become light heavyweight champion, something that I didn't even see him going up that heavy, and he did that. So, but as of right now, I have to put Terrence Crawford as number one.
How much do you separate the business from the competition, Floyd? Because a lot of times, to me, you put those two together, and you're like, for example, when Stephen A. brings up Santa Cruz, everyone knows Leo Santa Cruz can fight, obviously.
Yeah.
But he's moving up in weight, and he's not the kind of guy with, like, the fast twitchies we see in the fighters that we consider the elite of the elite.
So now we're going to say a guy, if I'm not mistaken, I think Lomo was able to jump, four weight classes? Three or four weight classes?
Three. Well, he went.
I thought it was three.
Feather, might be junior, three. Junior light.
Might
yeah.
Be
mm-hmm. Three.
So he's able to jump three weight classes, right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So Leo Santa Cruz, now he jumped four weight classes.
Yeah, Santa Cruz really good.
And okay, so I guess Lomo was the real deal, but Santa Cruz is not the real deal.
No, but I mean, Floyd, but there's some stuff you could, like when I say eyeball test, there's some dudes you watch and you go, okay, that guy's a little different, you know, and Santa Cruz is not one of these like Superman fighters. Tank, when you look at him, you go, those are different kinds of fast twitchies and punching power. And Leo Santa Cruz is a smaller guy moving up who's provided the fans with lots of thrills through the years. Excellent top fighter, but not a guy who someone looked at, like you say, maybe Tank has the potential to be number one pound for pound. No one ever looked at Santa Cruz and thought, yeah, he's going to be the best pound for pound fighter in the world. But what I'm asking about is a more general question for you.
Just because
yeah.
Leo Santa Cruz don't have a huge following within America still don't mean that he don't have a huge a Mexican background. Well,
that's what I'm asking.
Is following him.
That's what I'm asking. You have always been, you've been the best at playing the boxing game. When you said TBE, in the ring, someone else can have that. I'm talking about the whole thing. You're right. You've played the boxing game better than anyone. The way you think about it, which is a lot of times the way promoters think about it, is not just in terms of the quality of the athlete. Obviously, Santa Cruz is high quality, but also the business they generate, right? Stephen A.'s question seemed to speak only to the quality of the competition, not also to the business of boxing. How much of your decisions with Tank Davis incorporate the business of boxing? A guy who also brings a fan base, who doesn't maybe pose the maximum risk at that time.
I mean, if you guys are basically asking me, Tank is not scared of anyone. And the reason why we are not able to make certain fights with top rank is because of it just, like I said before, and I talked about this the other day as far as so many belts, so many champions. But if we can sit down and come to the table, I think that, if Tank get past Leo, which I truly believe he can, it may not be easy, but then we move on and we fight one more fight, then hopefully a fight with Telefimo can be made.
Well, let me ask you a question. Why can't you sit down at the table and get those fights done?
Because
you're saying
everybody
can sit down at the table. Why can't it happen?
It's not easy like you think it is. It's not easy just to go to the sit down and say, well, I want this to happen, because
You got guys that's very greedy and say, well, we want this and we want this. Yeah. When we know Gervonta Tank Davis is one of the biggest names in the sport of boxing right now.
Hey, Floyd, just so we're clear, we're not asking as like, hey, we're on ESPN, top ranks on ESPN. We want him to fight the top ranked fighter. We ask this of all the promoters on any network because you're right. Of course, it's difficult
you guys,
when guys,
you guys
are.
I want to say this. You guys are biased on ESPN. I'm going to come on record and say that far as in the boxing world.
But you think, well, I can't speak for everyone. I'm speaking for myself.
Me?
I didn't say you. I didn't say you.
Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
Because at the end of the day, we talk about, and I want to say congratulations to Telefimo for doing what he did. But, I mean, once again, we can't judge a guy. A guy is not great because he won one fight. To become a legendary great fighter, you must continue to go out there and beat good fighters and beat great fighters.
So, Floyd, what I mean is promoters are siloed with networks. We know who's where, right? So we're not even just asking purely about Teofimo because, of course, you're right. It's difficult for business reasons to cross networks, cross promotion, all that stuff, right? Everyone wants what they want. What we're really interested in, at least I'll speak for myself, I believe Stephen A. as well, is that the best fight the best regardless, just as fans. And you're saying you're willing to sit down with other promoters on different networks and see if those fights can happen. Teofimo or someone on DAZN, doesn't matter to us. That's very, like, from the boxing fans' point of view, that's what they want to hear. That's, I think, what we're getting at. Not just Teofimo specifically.
Well, our thing is how we work and how we operate. It must make business sense on our side. Because we know no matter who Tank fight at lightweight, Tank has the biggest name at lightweight. Tank has one of the biggest names in the sport of boxing right now. Of course, you know, as far as with Canelo, because Canelo have, you know, he fought Floyd Mayweather, he fought Triple G. Who else? He fought the guy at light heavyweight.
Kovalev.
So my thing is this. We're all, as of right now, with the things Tank has done and the noise that he's making and how he's selling out arenas, he has to be the A-side.
Well, let me get to you because I understand that you have retired. You're 50-0. You walked away from the game. You made a lot of money. But you did make news sometime last year when people were talking about you returning. Now, you're 43 years old, okay? You made more money than any boxer in history. But I'll be damned if you're going to be on this show and I ain't going to ask you, are you thinking about coming back, Floyd Money Mayweather, with the Terrence Crawford, with a Manny Pacquiao still fighting, with Errol Spence Jr., who got in a car accident, and God bless him, thank goodness that he's okay. But there's a few cats in the welterweight division. I want to know where your head is at as it pertains to you coming back in the ring, if at all possible.
Yes, I'm 43 years old, and I had a great career, a tremendous career, an unbelievable career. My focus is October 31st, Gervonta Tank Davis versus Leo Santa Cruz.
Okay.
And it's a big event. I agree Tank is a major draw. I think in light of Teo's win against Lomachenko, who the biggest draw is debatable, but we'll see how he does on pay-per-view.
Well, draws and nobody can refute that.
It's not debatable at all.
Gervonta's big time, but the point is, I still want to see him against somebody big time too.
Teo and Lomachenko did the biggest rating in years.
Right. Hold on. Their biggest rating on ESPN that you guys talked about. But when we got guys, when we got our fighters, because of course we got PBC as well as Mayweather promotion. When we doing fights on Fox and also on Showtime, we don't have to go out there and talk about the ratings that we're doing. We're doing 4 million. We're doing 5 million. So we don't have to talk about that.
Yeah, boxing
3 million
rates.
Was great.
That's fair.
No,
that's
boxing
fair.
Rates. I think no, you guys fair. Rate. I'm not denying that. I'm just saying,
you guys are not going to take nothing away from us. We do great numbers.
Does it sound like we're trying to take something away from you right now?
Well, I'm going to let you know that you're not going to take nothing away from us.
I'm not trying to. We have you on, and we're happy to have you on, and we're happy to talk to Tank Davis.
Once again, Mayweather Promotions, we are the past, the present, and the future of sports and entertainment. And we will continue to go out there and dominate and beat the best. Me and my team.
I love it. We got to have Floyd back just to debate everything. Because he gets after you guys.
Let me be very clear.
I see the Lakers.
Let me be very, very clear. I don't give a damn what network it is. If you are a promoter representing Gervonta Davis and we talking about the sport of boxing, you're going to be welcomed on. Period.
That's right.
You're going to be what?
The money team. Floyd, thank you so much for being with us. Saturday is going to be a lot of fun. That's pay-per-view.
Absolutely.
Tank Santa Cruz. Don't miss it. I know we'll all be watching. Appreciate you, sir. Stay safe.
By the way, tell your boy Leonard Ellerbe. Tell Leonard Ellerbe I want a pair of those shades. I need a pair of those shades.
Wait, shades? Do you see Floyd? Can you imagine Floyd's closet?
Yeah.
Did you see all those
You don't know Leonard Ellerbe with the shade game. No. It's pure.
Floyd,
the shade game is real.
Indulge me.
Leonard Ellerbe with that shade game.
Do a behind the scenes on Instagram of your closet. Because those fits, I mean, they're all fire. All right, Floyd, thank you. All right, we'll talk.
Thank you.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Vivid Seats wants to get you to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part, each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seats rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As the official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code TAKE. That's code TAKE. Visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. Major League Baseball will begin an investigation of the Dodgers' Justin Turner for his postgame World Series actions. Turner was pulled during Tuesday night's game because of a positive COVID test, but returned to the field postgame to celebrate with his teammates despite instructions from security to leave the field. He did not wear a mask the whole time. And Stephen A., I understand you've received more information on this subject.
I may have to stand down to Max Kellerman, to everybody involved that believes that Justin Turner should be punished. Okay. You know what my position was.
Of course.
I might have to stand down.
This is why I say we got to wait for the info to come out.
I got an insider, very obviously in Major League Baseball, very connected to the situation, texted me this about 45 minutes ago. Stephen A., you are wrong. Here is why. You hug a pitcher in Jensen who has heart problems. Jock Peterson had a month old on the field who has complications. Mm. Justin Turner tested positive the day before. They retested him again to make sure. He had to have known before the game. The problem is that Major League Baseball was probably too nice. They did not want to let him not play and have the second test be negative. So they let him play. When the proof came down, they removed him. And the families did not know. When they did, they heard he was placed in isolation and removed. Justin Turner broke through the removal protocol, grabbed his family, and went out on the field, knowing he was putting everyone in that bubble and on the field, media and all, at risk. He is the only player since they moved to the bubble in league championship or the World Series to test positive. The only player.
Which suggests maybe he broke protocol. Which not necessarily,
suggests,
but maybe.
They didn't say he broke protocol, but it clearly suggested. So I just read to you the details of what folks in Major League
Baseball. There's a major wrinkle in that I wasn't aware of.
That he tested positive.
He tested positive the day before. The seventh inning is when they retested it. So it's really a double standard for him that the team said, sure, you can play.
That's the question. Was it inconclusive?
Yes, they let him play.
Was it inconclusive or was it a positive that they had some reason to doubt the result of and they just didn't want to?
He said it.
Right, but if that's correct. Well, if all that information is correct, did they not want a competitive imbalance unfairly?
Yes.
If the case is it tested positive and they were just waiting for a second positive result, that's not good enough for Major League Baseball. But, Stephen, I want to say something quickly. Mm-hmm. This is what wearing masks is about. When Justin Turner goes out on the field because it's his moment and he wants to celebrate, but their family's on the field, unaware that he's on the field, and one of them has a one-month-old with complications and someone else has an underlying condition, what we're dealing with now, when you wear a mask, when you socially distance, when you make sacrifices, even in big moments you'd like to enjoy, it's not about you. It's about other people. What Justin Turner did, I'd like to hear from him. I want to know here his side of the story. But if it lines up with this, mostly, is selfish. People who don't want to wear masks in order to protect other people are being selfish. And this is a moment where we need to be selfless.
How is he selfish and not MLB when they were the ones that allowed him to play and then pulled him in the seventh inning when they knew he had COVID?
According to the test that I read, in other words, if you give indications that you've tested positive but they're not sure, their fear was they yank him from the game and then the test comes back, shows he's negative, and you denied him the opportunity to play in a World Series game even though he was negative. So you could make the argument they should have erred on the side of caution.
Yeah, that damage is worse than taking one picture at the end of the game.
They should have erred on the side of caution. The flip side is they were being a bit nice by saying, unless we're sure, we don't need to pull.
Nice or irresponsible?
Okay, that's a separate argument.
Yes.
But that does not absolve Turner. Turner committed the greater kind of moral, ethical infraction when upon knowing for sure, second positive test, they isolate him. He appears to be compliant with it and then goes through the isolation, through whatever barriers are erected from him getting on the field.
That point right there would not have necessarily changed my position. It's all these details that he was aware of prior to making that decision that really, really resonates with you.
Teammates and family and their health issues.
All these details, that changes a lot.
Right. It's his moment. He wants to enjoy it. A lot of moments have been altered for a lot of people. I mentioned earlier, graduation and different events.
Don't you think it's a double standard by MLB?
That's the world we're living in right now.
Listen, my source isn't employed by Major League, he isn't employed by Major League Baseball, but my point to you is this. The test itself was inconclusive. So whether it was inconclusive or positive, maybe they misspoke. The point is, they're like, that's a key fact.
Was it inconclusive or positive?
Because initially we thought he didn't find out the seventh inning. They knew the day before,
nothing
that's a different deal.
This one guy is telling me positive. The other folks are
saying
inconclusive.
Let's hear from Justin Turner. Justin Turner, you don't know.
At the end of the day, I just hope it didn't spread to anyone else and everybody's safe and healthy. We'll see y'all tomorrow.